How much time? 30 seconds. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
Run.
What?
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
All right, we're on.
Ready, Phil.
We're on in 5, 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. Lots to go over, lots to talk about, lots to recap as well, as we had a busy weekend ourselves. Jason, how are you?
I'm good. You know, I'm back on Central Time.
Yeah, that's just always nice.
After spending way too much time in airports and hotels over the last couple days.
That's okay. It's all right. You're a world traveler, so doing a good job there.
If going from here to Toronto and back as a world traveler, then
well,
yes, I am.
I mean, we'll call it enough. I mean, center of the universe, right?
Yeah.
So, end of the day, though, you were also in rinks this weekend. We're going to start off with that story in a second here, in terms of what we saw. But give us the lowdown about Toronto. Well, you know what? Let's save that.
I have thoughts, and they're connected to one of our stories.
Let's save that. We'll hold on to that for a second. As we fade out, the Pacific Coast Party, a fantastic song by Smash Mouth, and suitable for today because there is a Pacific Coast Party at the Hockey for All Center this weekend as the Thompson Okanagan Lakers emerged victorious as the gold medalists at the 2024 Female World Sports School Challenge, defeating the Winnipeg Avros 2-1 in the gold medal game. Outstanding game as well, might I add. Just, I'm going to say it right now, beauty of a game. Beauty of a game in terms of the way that they played. Lots to go over. Jay, your thoughts on, I mean, obviously you were only there for a few games because you were busy this weekend, but thoughts on what you saw at the tournament?
Oh, it's always an amazing experience to be there, and it's always a fun time being there, seeing these young players and, you know, really some of the best players of their age, right?
By far.
And it's always put on, like the volunteers.
We were joking. Like Jenna came out and did the gold medal game with Brian and I in terms of being out there. And like Jenna was saying, she's like, I was never this good at this age. What the heck?
Times change. But yeah, it was fantastic. It's always fantastic. And it was a great atmosphere as always. And I just, seeing them play, like Thompson Okanagan are incredible. Like just an incredible team, like top down, like just the way, the...
We summed it up too in that gold medal game. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody on that team stopped skating all weekend long.
No.
The conditioning that they have. And again, we laughed because we were joking about it during one of the intermissions that they're kind of like the marathon runners from Africa where they're up running on like Mount Kilimanjaro. Well,
yeah,
like they're based in the mountains, right? In terms of where they're training because Thompson Okanagan is in Vernon, BC. But I mean, they didn't stop moving all weekend.
Yeah, but it's like it's one of those things that shows you the gulf between like the good and great, or like the average and
right,
the great, where, you know, there are teams where you watch them and like when things aren't going right or when things, like when they're trying to get things going, like players are taking pucks at dead stops or they're overshooting where they're supposed to be or they're rushing down the ice in transition and they get caught up at the blue line. They have to stop and stay there. I see that a lot with the Bisons. But Thompson Okanagan, they just move with this fluidity where everyone's always in the right spot. They know where they're supposed to be. The puck is moving. They've got the momentum that they're carrying forward. The way that they kind of, their gap control was second to none, and it comes from that mobility.
That conditioning. Right? I mean, they're never out of position because they can recover so well.
Yeah, because they're never stopping. You don't have a chance to sit and breathe because you're not catching somebody flat-footed. You're not catching somebody at a dead stop. You're constantly being pressured and pushed, and there's always a second or third player there to hop on a loose puck or pressure the puck carrier. So it really grinds you down. They just, top to bottom, had an amazing tournament. And like I mean, everybody had a great tournament.
We're going to get into everybody else in a second here. It's, you know, Victor go the spoils.
Yeah,
so
it was great. Like, I thought it was, again, an amazing tournament.
I'll say, and again, not disagreeing with you in any way, tournament was fantastic. I'll say that, again, very impressed with the way that Thompson Okanagan played. They have something special there, right, this year. Whether or not it sticks around for next year, there's some graduating players obviously, and players may look at going other places. But they legitimately showed that they were, again, top of the class in that setup there. Yeah. They're one of the better teams in the BCEHL. If I can get that E in there. I always miss the E in there somewhere. But other teams that showed up, again, Avros lost their first game, rallied hard to win their next three to get to the final. They played extremely well in that final. Obviously, you know, you never want to see a team lose, but there has to be a winner and loser, and Avros, unfortunately, were that. Bronze medal game, the Rink Hockey Academy defeated the Eastman Selects by
another
5-4
team.
And Eastman, you look at them and you go, how are they only middle of the pack in terms of Manitoba Female Hockey League? They put together an outstanding weekend, and based on a lot of what we were just talking about, where players were just not so much the conditioning of Eastman. Not saying that they're non-conditioned or anything like that. I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but just the way that they were in the right spot to force. Mm-hmm. They were a transition team where they attacked you at center because they knew that the second pass coming out of the zone was going to center ice somewhere, and they had a player on somebody at that point every single time and were causing turnovers. Mm-hmm. They played that system so well that they legitimately carried it right into a semifinal game, and you go. They lost to Thompson Okanagan 1-0 in their semifinal game.
Yeah, and that was an incredible game.
Oh, my gosh. Like, that was so good. Mm-hmm. And you just go, man, like, that could have been the gold medal game. You look at the Rink Hockey Academy and Eastman after that. 5-4 victory in bronze medal. That could have been a gold medal game. You look at, and that's the thing, is that there are so many good teams, and they're all separated by maybe a goal or two. And we were witness to a lot of good hockey this week.
Yeah.
And for people that are going, it's just, you know, it's just U18 girls. Who gives a... You know what? These are the next girls that are going to be playing university hockey. These are the next girls that are going to be filling in the PWHL. These are the next girls that are going to be going over to Europe.
Yeah.
These are the next girls that are going to be legitimately your daughters are looking up to.
Yeah. There are professional women's hockey players right now who came through this tournament.
Right. Before you say that, I mean, there were girls that have gone through this tournament and have already retired, which is kind of crazy. Like, Amanda Makala used to play net for the Thunder Bay Queens.
Yeah.
She played for CWHL Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's not retired, but she's not playing professionally now.
Yeah.
But she's legitimately one of those players you go, holy, we saw her here.
Yeah.
We recognize her. Erin Frankel, who is playing PWHL, played in one of these tournaments with Shattuck St. Mary's when she was here. And again, you go, I know her. She's playing pro hockey now.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is that there are opportunities. And again, not everybody's going to make it, and not everybody's going to make that jump. But at the end of the day, a handful of these girls are going to have a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing.
Like, it's kind of become, like, what's the major Quebec, like, it's the midget tournament in Quebec.
That Pee-wee tournament they hold in Quebec, City.
Yes, it's kind of for the men. That's, you know, for the men's side. That this is becoming that for the women's side, where, like, the names that you're going to see through this tournament, it's going to be absolutely insane. It's just like this little U18 tournament in Winnipeg has become something like,
from
so much more important.
We were saying from 8 teams when it started to 16 now, and legitimately, if they wanted to, not that they will, because it takes an army to put this tournament on, and certainly that's one of the factors. But, I mean, they could go bigger if they really wanted to.
Yeah.
Will they? No. And I hope they don't, because,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that they shouldn't. I'm not saying I don't wish they don't make it bigger. But they could go to a bigger field and have even more chaos out there.
Yeah, but Larry's a busy man.
Well, that's exactly it. Like, I mean, the army it takes to put this on is massive. And let's not be remiss, because, I mean, that's important as well. We want to thank all the volunteers. We want to thank all the parents. We want to thank all the sponsors who helped make this tournament a success. Obviously, Kathy and Larry are fantastic, and they are the backbones of what goes on here. I mean, their passion for the game, their vibrant spirit for everything women's hockey, everything female hockey is bar none. I mean, they are so passionate and so caring about seeing not just the Flames, not just the St. Mary's Academy Flames move on, but all of these girls go on and do bigger things. Mm-hmm. They started, and legitimately, the parents, the volunteers, the sponsors, without them, this tournament doesn't go.
Exactly.
I want to point out specifically the junior hosts, who are minor league hockey, minor female hockey players in the city, who are usually U15 players, who come out and legitimately are the gophers for every single team. They come out all week and legitimately work their tails off, and they're kind of brought in, and some of these teams are, you know, just do what they can. There are a handful of these teams legitimately this weekend that made those junior hosts part of their team.
Yeah.
Like, told them, like, we go in for intermission, you come in for intermission. You can hear the speech, you can hear the talk, you can talk to the girls, you can talk to, like, it's incredible how this community, this little hockey community, becomes so much bigger when you kind of sit down and go, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, as I was going to say, like, there's this community that's been built around this tournament, and it comes up every single year, and it's amazing, right? Like, it's amazing being there and being a part of it and seeing it continue to flourish and grow.
Want to thank Andrea Jackson, who was the keynote speaker at this year's banquet as well. She works for True North Sports Entertainment as one of the managers of the national partnerships that True North Sports Entertainment has. So basically, all of the advertising you see on the boards, all of the advertising you see in the arena, mm-hmm. all of the agreements and partnerships they have for branding, it's all basically Andrea and her team that do that. So fantastic message from her at the banquet as well, where it wasn't about, you know, like, she never played hockey. She, like she said, I'm very honest, never played hockey, wasn't on the Flames team, didn't do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But she's working in sports, and she basically said, like, don't just think you have to be on the ice to work in sport. You can be anything you want. And we talked about that during the intermissions and stuff as well. But legitimately hearing it from her, where you go, she left Winnipeg because there were no opportunities here and came back and mm-hmm. found an opportunity to work with True North Sports Entertainment. That's awesome.
Yep.
And now she's working as one of the sort of the key people in there in terms of, you know, Jets and, say, again, I don't know who any of their, I'm not going to mention who their major brands are, but Jets and, say, Coke, or Jets and, say, Pepsi, or Jets and whoever mm-hmm. are a brand, our brand's, you know, partnership, because she's put that together. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So cool to see that. Really happy to see that. Staff at St. Mary's Academy, who always, you know, support this tournament in terms of having girls off and girls away from school, thank you for allowing that as well. I know that, you know, classes obviously matter. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that as well. And again, the army of people that come out and certainly, you know, help. I mean, I'm going to miss names, and I'm not going to try and say them all, so I'm not going to say any of them. But every single volunteer that we ran into this weekend was fantastic. Yep. So much of a pleasure to deal with. Every single team we ran into, a pleasure to deal with as well. We had a good time with all the teams and stuff as well. Dates are going to change next year, though.
Okay.
So we went from the third week, or this last week in January, but this is a bad week because a number of teams actually had players that were studying for exams. Mm. Didn't really help. Didn't really. I mean, hopefully everybody did well on their exams. I'm not going to say that, but
so.
Next year, if you're out there and you're thinking about, you know, these guys are yapping up this tournament pretty, you know, pretty well winded on this tournament. January 30th to February 2nd. January 30th to February 2nd will be the Female World Sports School Challenge, the 2025 Female World Sports School Challenge. We will be there again. We will go and have a good time. We'll go have a laugh. But, yeah, we'll have a great time doing that. If you want to listen to the game, the gold medal game called by Brian Svensson, host of the Pity Party, Svenny of the Pity Party.
He did a great job,
Svenny did great. If you want to listen to that, it's up on Hockey Blog in Canada. I have the entire gold medal game posted. You can go and listen to it anytime you like. If you want to download it, listen to it on your own leisure, by all means, you can do that as well. So streaming or downloadable is there. But you can hear the Avros and Lakers battle it out for the gold medal, because it was a fantastic game. And certainly we were entertained very much. The old Russell Crowe standing in the middle of the gladiator. Well, are you not entertained? Yeah, no, we were entertained.
Awesome.
We were entertained. It was fantastic. So with that, we're going to wrap up the 2024 Female World Sports School Challenge. I want to thank everybody who came out, everybody who came and watched games, everybody who came and supported the girls, everybody who came and worked at the event, volunteered at the event, whatever you did. We want to thank everybody who did that, because, again, another smash hit in terms of how mm-hmm. good this weekend was. So
amazing.
Yeah, there we go. Let's get into some of the bigger hockey stories then. Not this wasn't a bigger hockey story. We certainly enjoy the the fun of that tournament. But let's get into some of the bigger hockey stories now. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start NHL?
Sure.
I mean, most of them are NHL, I guess, related in terms of what we got here now. But, I mean, we'll start there then. Let's start in Washington, D.C., because I think this is an absolutely bizarre story that, mm-hmm. whatever. I mean, I know that owners are supposed to be smart business people, but occasionally they open their mouth and say stupid stuff about business, and I often wonder how they got to be as rich as they are when they do this. Ted Leonsis...
Just completely divorced from reality.
Oh, totally, but you'll see exactly how. Ted Leonsis, the chair of Monumental Sports and Entertainment for more than two decades. Again, everybody knows him in Washington. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows who he is. He can't walk around, basically, without saying hi to people. He went out and penned a nearly 2,600-word open letter about his new arena, his much-debated $2 billion effort to build a new arena and mixed-use development for the NBA's Washington Wizards and the NHL's Washington Capitals in Alexandria, Virginia. Okay? Mm-hmm. Basically penned this, put it, and published it in the newspaper for everybody to read, say, like, why are you guys so bent out of shape about this? Like, it's happening. Again, as noted here by Front Office Sports, quote, the missive, highly unusual in both length and specificity compared to other team owners pursuing stadiums or arena projects, amounts to his most substantive, holy smokes, the words in here. I can't even pronounce them today. I'm so excited. Substantive response to the date as the proposal faces growing opposition in both D.C. and Virginia. He said, and Jay, you can certainly mount the stacks of data that we have that go against this, but he said, quote, I find the notion that sports arenas and stadiums do not provide economic benefit to be simply illogical. you heard that sigh. Professional sports teams are important to the fabric of a community. The buildings they play in bring people together. They drive economic growth, and they are worthy of investment, unquote.
Okay, they do bring people together. They do not drive economic growth.
Every single data source we have says they don't.
So the whole situation with the city of Detroit going bankrupt, right? The Red Wings actually got money from the city after claiming bankruptcy. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh, that's weird. I never thought about that. Did Winnipeg die after the Jets left? Oh, no, we actually started to economically do better throughout, you know, the 2000s and into the 2010s when they came back. And remember the whole story was like, oh, yeah, the Jets coming back. It's going to revitalize downtown. Guys, we're a decade plus into that. Our downtown's not revitalized. Unless your name is True North Sports and Entertainment, our downtown is not revitalized. And we keep talking about how, oh, we have to revitalize downtown to get more use out of the Jets and get more people downtown living and working and stuff.
The worst part, though, is that there are less people working downtown than ever before.
Yes.
And it's not that, again, and I'm not trying to make light of the situation downtown. Obviously, you know, having less people working downtown means there are less people downtown, but there's no way to bring them back either. They aren't coming downtown and hanging out there because there's a Jets game. They don't even want to be down there to work.
Yeah.
You're paying them to be there.
I'm one of those people.
See, there we go.
But, like, the fact that he has to go out and basically refute decades and decades worth of science and like economic research, business research, sociological research, political science research, decades worth of research that shows that sports teams do not materially help the economy of a city. Like the number of capital cities, the major metro markets that do not have a professional sports team. Are they all floundering? Are they all burning through tons and tons of money? No, they're fine.
Right, but the question becomes, and again, I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm not debating that in terms of what's going on.
He's objectively wrong.
Oh, he is. I get what he's trying to do in terms of raising the stakes a little bit and put some pressure on politics. But in this case, politics shouldn't matter because it's legitimately a cut and dry story.
Yeah.
You do not make money by building a new arena. The only person who does is the owner of that arena.
Yes. Like, I remember, so I was listening to, you know, Elliot Friedman was on a podcast in Arizona talking about, like, the Phoenix situation. And, like, the Board of Governors basically giving Coyotes ownership a date and said, like, if you don't have an answer for us by the All-Star game, like, we're done here. But that, he said something really important there. In that interview where he said the Tempe decision shocked people because they thought it was done and dusted. It was going to go through. It was going to be easy. This always works. But the city of Tempe stood up and said no.
And for good reason.
People aren't stupid. People are realizing it, right, especially right now with how economics right. and business and politics are working on this continent right now, not just like in the U.S. versus Canada, because it's happening across both borders. People aren't stupid. People are paying attention.
Okay, so
they're tired of being conned.
Okay, so here, and again, I have this queued up only because I went looking for it. But so
stop
again,
giving billionaires money.
2015, John Oliver did the whole thing about looking at the stadium. Again, John Oliver is a comedy. I get that. Last Week Tonight's a comedy sort of show that puts factual information into more lighter context. But again, I think this is. I think I'm in the right spot here. Let's see if I can get this to play here.
A major review of almost 20 years of studies showed economists could find no substantial evidence that stadiums had increased jobs, incomes, or tax revenues. Or to put that another way...
This one economist said to me, I love this line, he said, rather than spend $1 billion on a stadium, you're actually better off flying a plane over a city and dumping $1 billion on the populace and just letting them pick up the money and spend it.
And that, but, okay, legitimately.
That's literally stimulating the economy,
that's,
though.
That's legitimately the direct argument to the Ted Leonsis crap that he just spewed, because that makes more sense.
Exactly.
There is no proof over 20 year study. There is no proof that they provide any jobs, any tax benefit, or any increased revenue.
Because here's the quote, jobs they create. You have temporary construction jobs for the construction project. When that
but
is done,
we went over all this during the Tempe setup as well.
My
when they
brother
were,
works in
when
construction.
When they were spewing about like, 7,000 new jobs, and we said, yeah, but 6,800 of those are part time.
Yeah, my brother works at a construction firm, right? When the government or when anybody ever says this project will bring jobs, it's only temporary, because when that construction's finished, that firm is going to go off and do something else,
right?
And those jobs are going to move somewhere else.
But that's the thing, though. And again, when this guy says, dropping $1 billion on the populace, that will get spent. That money will get spent somewhere.
It'll just get immediately thrown right back into the economy.
And that's, and again, and I'm not saying that, and again, people are going to go, oh, politics. You can't talk politics in your show. This is the whole idea behind stimulating the economy during the pandemic. This is the whole idea behind giving some people some money.
Or the so universal they can go basic
out,
income.
Right, so you can go out and spend some money, and then your economy starts picking up a little bit faster, starts recovering a little bit better. Why? Because people are spending money. It's a circle. The wheel of money is a circle. It's always going to be a circle. You have
If you want the economic engine to start going, you need to put fuel in it, and the fuel is money.
And so having a guy say, well, arenas bring people together, and that's where it creates economic growth.
So does a flipping park.
You know what would create economic growth downtown in terms of Ted Leonsis to invest in? Probably, I don't know, low-income housing, some affordable housing. That will give people a place to live, and they'd have more money to spend.
Supporting entrepreneurship to put businesses downtown, start companies, open a factory.
You've got $2 billion to spend, and this is what you're spending it on.
Yeah, a vanity project. He's not spending the $2 billion, though. He gets an arena for
$400
million. Well,
hold on. We'll go into that in a second. Okay, so some of the arguments that Leonsis made in his piece were, he champions his long-held belief that Washington, the area, is actually becoming a super city, with the team's media market stretching from Richmond to southern Delaware, and continued growth within that area reducing geographic distinctions. Quote, monumental sports and entertainment has always been about the entire DMV, Leonsis wrote, referring to the District of Columbia, Maryland, and Virginia. Now, that might be true. Hold on. That might be true. And we're seeing this right now with Milwaukee and Chicago. They're talking about the same thing, where they're kind of blending into each other in terms of how they're expanding. But my question is this. If that's how it works, then why isn't New York and L.A. the center of every single populace in the world in terms of economic windfall? Again, people go to New York all the time to try and find a break. Well, not going there to find a, they're not going there to just pick up money. They're not going there because there's umpteen jobs available. They're going there to try and find a better life.
Yeah.
That means that there isn't the guarantee of a better life. So
but also,
stop talking about how being a bigger city makes any difference at all, because if none of those people come to the game, it doesn't matter how big your city is.
But also, how does that help your argument?
I don't know. But again, this is where
you're literally in the capital of the United States.
This is where I don't understand, because if nobody goes to the games from the people that you're adding to the populace, no one cares.
You move to Maryland. You're still literally move to Maryland. You move to Delaware. You move to any of those places. You're still just being bankrolled by government employees. That's all that's there.
I don't understand. Anyway. We're going to go on quickly here. He seeks to counter the argument that Alexandria Project will reduce accessibility for Wizards and Capitals fans. This one is particularly ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
The 2.6 miles from the Potomac Yard to the D.C. border. And everybody, again, we talked about this before when we were looking at it initially. It's about 4 or 5 miles away from where the current arena that the Capitals play in. So not that far away. Here's the problem, though. That short distance can require anywhere from 30 to 90 minutes in a typical Washington rush hour traffic session, and the proposed new arena is not nearly as centrally located within this area's metro system as the current arena is. You're basically asking the metro system to build a bunch of extra rail now and send a bunch of extra, you know, buses, trains, whatever, out to your new place to make it centrally located, which is all cost to the public.
Yes. Also, that's an hour and a half that you can get easily get up to 2, maybe 3 hours because you're traveling. You're going to be going at rush hour time to get to a game on time.
Or get home to get to a game on time.
Just the fact that this billionaire does not understand traffic because he does not have to deal with it on a day-to-day basis should show you how divorced from reality and how divorced from your day-to-day experience these people are.
The size of land, he argues, is critical in the strategy behind the project. With 12 acres in the Virginia parcel, more than tripling the 3.8-acre size of the Capital One Arena, the team's current home. It's funny that they won a Stanley Cup in 3.8 acres and didn't need 12 acres to do it, but whatever.
Hold on, quote,
professional sports teams are realizing that to build championship-level contenders, an outsized investment in space is required, unquote. What?
Who and how?
You just won a
how
Stanley...
How does that help you?
You just won a Stanley Cup a few years ago.
All that tells me is that you want 4 times the amount of land for $400 million. You just want property.
Right.
That's all you're saying.
But that's what he's looking to do is not only build the development, build other developments. It's essentially the same thing that went on down in Tempe.
Yeah.
We're building all sorts of additional developments onto it, not just an arena.
So, totally. What was the footprint of T-Mobile Arena with Vegas? Oh no, it's just an arena downtown.
What's the footprint of the arena in Winnipeg? It's like four city blocks.
Also, it's centrally located. Right. Also, it's on a major artery of the city.
Okay, so here was your point. Ready for this? Now, folks, again, I know you like we talk money on here a lot because money's the root of all evil, especially in the NHL, yeah. But Monumental is planning to contribute $400 million towards a $2 billion project. That's one-fifth of the total cost.
Yeah.
With the rest coming from public bonds primarily funded by lease payments from teams and development-related tax revenues. The effort also calls for more than $100 million upfront in subsidies from the city of Alexandria. That's a lot of public money going into stuff. A lot of public money. For a guy who wants something so badly... For a billionaire who wants something so badly, that's a lot of public money.
$400 million. He gets 12 acres of prime real estate in Alexandria, Virginia for $400 million.
That's less than the current...
He gets it fully developed
that's
for
less,
$400 million.
He's getting 12 acres and a new arena for less than what an expansion fee is right now in the NHL.
What are we doing here?
I'm shocked. Not shocked, I guess. I mean, that's wrong to say. I'm not shocked as much as I am just disgusted. Despite the big move towards transparency, Leonce is like to face more obstacles in his path as well. Legislation has been introduced in the Virginia General Assembly, but state-level political opposition has already surfaced to join pockets of objection amongst local residents who neither want the stadium nearby nor want the traffic.
Yeah, because it's Alexandria, Virginia, and if you don't know anything about that area, not the kind of people who want lots more roads and construction in a loud arena.
I just want to know.
An entertainment district near them.
Because, again, the owners have all sorts of people around them, whether it be, you know, advisors or hockey people, whatever. I don't care. But you would think that one of the advisors, one of the people that look after his money, one of the people that, you know, might look after his investments would go maybe back off on the it's good for the economy statement because we have all of this data that says no compared to your thoughts and I really don't understand that because again as we heard in that clip from John Oliver, mm-hmm. there are 20 years of examining this problem. There was no benefit.
So for people in Winnipeg, I want to put this in context for you. How much was the total price tag of the project? $2 billion.
$2 billion is what he's got is what's written here. Yeah.
So $2 billion. That means that the city has to, or the city and the state, the public has to eat $1.6 billion to build.
Correct.
To build an arena from, and the roads and the sewage and all of that.
Public bonds, which are issued by the city.
Yeah.
Okay. Which are usually used for building things like roads and schools and stuff like that because nobody wants to pay for them directly. Yep. Again, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Public bonds that are issued by the city that have to be paid back in a certain amount of time and funded by lease payments from teams and development related tax revenues.
Okay. So $1.6 billion that comes from the public that has to be paid back.
Correct. Yeah.
What do you think the annual budget for the city of Winnipeg is?
Not close to $1.6 billion.
$1.2 billion. Would you rather have the entire budget to run a city, or would you like to have a shiny new arena that gets to make a billionaire even more money? $1.23 billion is the operating budget for the city of Winnipeg, or was the operating budget for 2023.
Okay, so, and again, I'm just going to throw this out here. Because people are going to go, well, you know, whatever, in terms of you know, you guys are just whining, just complaining. Ted Leonsis' net worth is estimated to be $2.8 billion. If you want an arena, why aren't you building it?
He can get a loan. He can do what every other billionaire does and get a loan for that money.
But again, if you want it, go get it. Like, this is what I'm saying. You have enough money in equity and whatever, in real estate, whatever you've invested in, to amount to $2.8 billion. You're not hurting for the money. You just need a little liquidity. That's all.
Yeah, you just need to work harder. You can't afford your shiny new toy. Don't buy it.
As of right now, Forbes, in January of 2023, Forbes estimated him at $4.51 billion.
Like, it is insane to me that they are going to potentially give this man more money.
Oh, sorry, that's Monumental Sports. An estimated $4.51 billion, which he owns,
yeah.
Might I add.
So we get $4.4 billion worth of value on top of his net worth. So they're going to give $1.6 billion, potentially, to this project, which is more than the city of Winnipeg spends on firefighters, paramedics, road repairs, police, electricity, city staff, wages, water, municipal projects, trash and recycling services.
This is
literally our entire city's operating budget.
But this is the same argument that Tempe had, in that if they're giving all this money out, when do they see the recoup for it, right? And that's where residents stood up and said, hold on a second here, we can't afford this. And again, there's going to be pushback now.
Yeah.
But this letter that he wrote, again, should have been, somebody should have slapped him across the back of the head and said, you're not going to win any votes this way.
He's been treated like he is a king in that
city. And that's
city
fair. And that's fair
for so long, but he thinks he can get away
with
it.
But that's fair for what he's invested in currently. Again, you've mm-hmm. revitalized the area down around Verizon One Arena or whatever the hell it's called. Yeah. You've revitalized that area. You've done a great job. Yeah, it's run into disrepair and disarray over the last few years because of what's gone on. So then invest in getting it back up to where it is.
Yeah.
Invest a little bit more. Because this is your arena, and you're not selling it, might I add. You're going to keep it. You're not selling it. So what are you going to do after you move out of it? Just let it run into further disrepair?
No, he's probably going to invest money to revitalize it and use it.
Oh, he said it's going to be used for women's sports and for college sports. So the dude's making hand over fist in money again off a property that's now a secondary property for him.
Oh.
Dude's turning into a slumlord.
Hey, you want the new thing? Sell the old one then.
But that's the thing, though, is I don't understand.
I can't buy two houses.
But that's the thing, though. I don't understand why this is becoming such a massive problem for Ted Leonsis, who has enough money to do what he wants to do, and just keeps raking everybody over the coals for it. It's the same as every other sports owner out there. This argument has gone on over the last, and I'll put it into context. Since 2000, this argument has gone on for like more than 90 times. We replace stadiums faster than again, as John Oliver said, faster than we replace Spider-Man.
Yes. Oh, it was, what was it? It was the Steve Dangle podcast had the number because they were talking about this, and they were talking about the situation in Salt Lake City and in Calgary. They were talking about the one in Calgary. An arena lasts maybe 10 years now.
I think the average, I looked it up earlier today. I think it was something like 16 years is the average length of a stadium and arena. So, yeah.
But then you take like the right. really big old ones that, you know, the Nassau Coliseums that just got replaced, the Scotiabank Saddle Dome that's going to get replaced. You have to filter out Madison Square Garden because that's a complete aberration.
They do billion-dollar renovations on that all the time. So.
Oh, so you could take the thing you already have.
Remember, you don't. But remember though. Remember though, you need more space. You got to have more space.
Yeah, because that totally helped That totally helped the Chicago Blackhawks, right?
The Rangers in 94 won in the same
yeah,
arena.
Totally,
the Rangers
in more room totally helped the Ottawa Senators become a Stanley Cup winning franchise.
But now they're looking downtown where they have more room. Again, this is where, but this is what I mean. Like we make arguments for argument's sake now to try and justify a new arena, and I don't understand.
They're not supported give by
me
facts.
Give me the numbers, and I'll tell you why you're wrong. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, we're letting people get away with making arguments based on someday maybes and not
it's
hard
not even,
facts.
But it's not even someday maybes. We're getting away with we're letting them get away with absolute like if I
They're
told
selling
you
air.
Jay, if I told you that right now that I'll rent your house for the next 25 years. I'll rent your house for the next 25 years. I'll look after it. I'll maintain it. I'll probably have to put $5,000 into it every year. Mm-hmm. But then after that 25 years, you're welcome to use it for whatever you want. What are your thoughts on that?
No.
You're giving me a 25-year-old arena that has to be replaced? You're giving me a 25-year-old house that you've lived in for most of your life?
No,
ew.
Thank you.
Yuck. But this is the thing. I look at this now and I go, we really don't understand. We really don't listen to what people are saying as much as we should. And again, be it the information age where we're looking at our phones. But at the end of the
2020s, we treat billionaires like they're gods.
But at the end of the day, though, it should still make economic sense, and none of it ever does.
No, because people look at his net worth being a multiple billion dollars, and they think he's smart. He knows how money works because he's got lots of it.
I'm not going to say that.
I'm going to just gesture in the vague direction of Elon Musk.
I'm going to gesture in a number of ways. If that's the case, then Bernie Madoff. What?
Oh,
I'm not saying that they're related, but there's a guy who was rich and empire fell. Let's move on. We got about 20 minutes to go. Jay, I know you were in Toronto, so we're going to talk a little bit about this now. NHL All-Star Weekend in Toronto gets underway tonight.
Was it?
Lots going on. Let's hear about how well it's advertised down there.
So I was in Toronto, and you know, all the walking around I did, you know, taking like 30,000 steps a day, it was crazy. I like walked all over the place. That's for like a completely weird, different reason. All the restaurants that I went to, all the meetings that I had, all the places that I went to. I saw two banners advertising the All-Star Game. One was at the University of Toronto, and then another one,
which ironically,
like on a flight. On a pole, like on a light pole.
Which ironically has Mattamy, which is former Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah. And
as a team,
I
as
saw
their home
two of those banners hanging off light poles. Didn't see anything else. I saw one billboard ad, and it was at, you know, Dundas Square right by the Eaton Center. And of course it would be there. There was nothing in any restaurant. There was nothing on any, there were no billboards. All of the signage that's on the streets, there was nothing. Nobody was talking about it. There was no buzz in the city at all. And the only merch that I saw was one table and one clothing rack at a store at Pearson Airport. One.
We're doing a great job again marketing this game. I don't know why we hold it every year. But hey, the NHL All-Star game is back. Yay. Okay,
and
so let's get
cared.
NHL All-Star Thursday starts tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. Actually, already started in terms of what's going on. But Scotiabank Arena will host the Tim Hortons NHL annual NHL All-Star Player Draft, where they'll get drafted into various teams. They'll also have the NHL Alumni Man of the Year Award. They're going to honor the 1967 Toronto Maple Leafs. For some strange reason, I have no idea why they're being honored. Canadian Tire's Professional Women's Hockey League 3-on-3 Showcase will be there. We're going to talk about that in a second. And all that can be seen on Sportsnet and TVA and Sports in Canada and on ESPN, ESPN Plus in the U.S. Here's the fun part, though. And again, I'm not saying that this is the best part, but it usually is the best part. NHL Skills Competition goes tomorrow. Okay? Mm-hmm. I don't give a crap who sponsors it either. I don't give, not giving anybody some. I gave the Tim Hortons one only because.
Remember when the divisions were sponsored?
I remember when lots of things got sponsored for stupid reasons.
Yeah.
Can't we just go back to having normal.
Like the Scotiabank Canadian division or something?
2024 NHL All-Stars competition goes tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern, as 12 NHL All-Stars compete for points in 8 events, with the player earning the most points winning a prize of $1 million. Saturday, we'll see the NHL All-Star Game going at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central Time. For those of you who need a refresher on the skills competition, again, it's going to be the best part of the weekend. 12 skaters are selected to participate in 8 events. They include fastest skater, hardest shot, stick handling, one-timers, passing challenge, accuracy shooting, the NHL shootout, and the NHL obstacle course. The shootout will have 8 players, as 4 will be eliminated, and the obstacle course will have 6 players, as 2 more get eliminated from that previous event. First place in every event gets 5 points, and then each place receives 1 fewer point down to 6th place and lower, which receives no points. Scoring is intended to encourage participation in events that might be less populated than others, so if there are less players, you'll get a point. Just for showing up, you get points.
Yay.
The 4 lowest point earners at the first 6 rounds will be eliminated. The 8 remaining players advance to a 7th round, which is the shootout. The penalty shot will also feature all 8 NHL All-Star goaltenders, and the top goalie in the event will himself win $100,000. So basically the guy who makes the most saves. And I know, I'm not getting into it. The points will be doubled in the obstacle course in the final round, which is intended to keep players engaged until the end. And the NHL said to expect some quote-unquote twists on the traditional skills events, unquote.
You said something very important there. To keep players engaged.
Oh, but that's the whole thing, though. So here.
I am not engaged at all. I am so confused.
I don't care. The design of the jerseys is awful.
They look like really bad practice
jerseys. And stop partnering with Bieber. He's an idiot. He has zero ability to do anything of any normalcy. Stop partnering with him.
But he's famous. I'll take, he's Canadian.
You know what? For everybody that gets angry about the Taylor Swift thing in the NFL, that's how angry I get about Bieber being involved with the NHL. Like I despise the fact that he gets put on a pedestal when the guy has zero talent.
Like,
and I know Jenna's going to freak out if she hears this. She loves some of his music. Dude has zero talent.
But also, because he designed the jerseys, right?
Well, his fashion house did. Whatever the hell
fire
that means.
Everyone.
Exactly.
But, like, I will only give the NHL credit for them bringing Tate McRae as one of the celebrities because she has, her whole, her story has created a meme
right.
in hockey.
And again, she
is relevant to the current young generation they're trying to capture. She's relevant to a demographic that the NHL is desperate to break into. She's Canadian. She actually has talent.
She does.
And, she's entertaining. Great.
But
Will Arnett?
Again, Will Arnett, because he's Canadian and has a hockey. Again, Will Arnett was at Jets games. Like, we've seen him at Jets games and stuff as well. I don't care about who the celebrity coaches are as much as I just hate the fact that we don't have professional hockey players looking like professional hockey players anymore.
No.
They look like they're legitimately playing ECHL hockey now. Those jerseys are bloody awful.
No, but they get to attach that it came from Justin Bieber's fashion brand, so they can sell a bajillion jerseys.
Yeah, sure, because those Toronto jerseys are selling like hotcakes, the black ones. Those ones are awful, too.
Yeah.
Like, come on! Anyway, whatever. Skills competition's going to go. Now that I got over my rant of Bieber. Do you want to know who's doing what? Who's going to be competing in what event? Because that was released,
okay.
And we have that information. What event do you want to start with? You can pick.
Hardest shot. My favorite. The only event that I care about.
So all the players that have compete, they're going to be competing in hardest shot are going to get a point because there's only five. Your hardest shot competitors are
okay,
Austin Matthews, Cale Makar, David Pasternak, JT Miller, and Elias Pettersson.
What? I'm sorry. You first off, you have one defenseman. I have seen none of those guys take a slap shot their entire career. Maybe JT Miller.
There are two defensemen in the entire setup in this entire 12 player NHL All-Star Skills competition. The other one is Quinn Hughes.
But how are any of those guys supposed to like do anything?
So anyway,
in the hardest shot.
Okay, so
remember when like Shea Weber? Remember when they brought guys to the All-Star game just to do the hardest shot?
Well, they brought them in because again, everybody is like, I can't outshoot Shar, I can't outshoot whatever. So they brought guys in to compete with
bring
them.
Some random dudes,
right?
In,
yeah,
and it was entertaining.
Fastest skater.
Okay, I'm going to assume Connor McDavid's on the list.
Correct. Anybody else you want to throw in there?
Oh, who's going?
Cale Makar is also in that.
Sure.
There are only five people in the fastest skater. And,
so they all get a point.
And Connor McDavid is going to win 5 points because none of these guys are going to catch him. William Nylander, Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar, Matthew Barzal.
Matthew Barzal. I am so excited to see every Toronto uncle melt down when they see William Nylander in the fast skater competition, look like he's not trying, but still place second.
He probably could, considering the other names that are on that list. One-timers has a vast number of people on it for some reason. Elias Pettersson, Nathan MacKinnon, Leon Draisaitl, Nikita Kucherov, JT Miller, Austin Matthews, Matthew Barzal, and David Pasternak.
Because it's teams, right?
Sure, yeah.
Be two of them.
But again, that's a huge number on there, and legitimately, you look at that and you go, Kucherov, okay, I get it. Like he's a one timer. Okay, Pasternak, I get it. He's a one timer. Draisaitl can certainly do that. MacKinnon, no problem. Matthews doesn't really do a lot of one timers.
No, he's
Barzal doesn't really do anything. Pettersson is more of a skill guy.
Yeah,
and JT Miller just kind of shows up.
JT Miller, why is JT Miller there?
Like, top 10 in scoring.
I don't care.
Vancouver people voted him in.
It's a
Hang on. You want to go even worse? Stick handling has Quinn Hughes, Connor McDavid, Elias Pettersson, Nikita Kucherov, who doesn't stick handle, Leon Draisaitl, Nathan MacKinnon, David Pasternak, Matthew Barzal, William Nylander. Matthew Barzal is like in every single. I think he's just going to try and see if he can get like 1 point in every event to try and move on. Accuracy shooting has Accuracy shooting has virtually everybody. Nikita Kucherov, Cale Makar, Connor McDavid, Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, David Pasternak, Nathan MacKinnon, William Nylander, Leon Draisaitl, Austin Matthews.
Matthew Barzal?
No Matthew Barzal in that one.
Oh, wow.
He's not as accurate as he thinks he is. The goalies that you're going to see are Jeremy Swayman, Alexander Georgiev, Jake Oettinger, Sergei Bobrovsky, Cam Talbot, Igor Shesterkin, Thatcher Demko, and Connor Hellebuck. So those guys have at least, you have a 1-in-8 shot of bringing home 100 grand for those guys. Nice. But we'll see who moves on. But
congratulations, hardest Connor Hellebuck.
Hardest shot and faster skater are already going to be points handed out to people because there's only five people in each of those categories.
The fact that they have to have a point system drives me insane. Just like tell me. This is a failing exercise without telling me this is a failing exercise.
Come on now. Connor McDavid thought this would be a great idea.
They had to give out.
Connor McDavid voted on it.
They had to start giving out prize money because guys didn't want to be there.
I'm not saying anything about that either, but whatever.
Now they're giving out prize money because the skills competition is so not fun anymore that they don't want to be there.
The fact that you don't have guys like Crosby, the fact that you don't have, again, there's all sorts of guys that should be in here. And again, I'm not saying that Crosby should be an all-star by any means. I'm saying that he is one of your league's biggest and brightest stars. He should be at every All-Star game. I want to go back to the era where we picked 20 guys for each team and they were the biggest stars on the planet. I don't care about, don't get me wrong, I understand representation matters when you want to try to grow the game in certain markets. I get that. But at the end of the day, I'm not selecting a Nashville Predator because they suck.
Why are there Columbus Blue Jackets there?
Again,
I'm sorry. Matthew Barzal, great person. He's a good player. Should not be there.
If you're dead last in the NHL, Chicago, you should not be sending a guy there. You're not an all-star. You're legitimately just a fill-in.
like I this is just Gary trying to manufacture try his darndest to grow to get these irrelevant teams to be relevant somehow.
Okay, make it relevant and put one guy from each team in the skills competition. Not one guy from each team, but one guy from the top 12 teams in the skills competition and say, go at it, boys. Have at it. Let's see who's the best.
Exactly.
Not two guys from Vancouver, not two guys from Edmonton. That's four spots wasted on two teams.
There's one Jet in there, and he's a goalie.
And Connor, again, I'm not saying that Kyle Connor should be there, but Kyle Connor, in terms of hardest shot, might have a chance. Kyle Connor on one-timers should win that.
Yeah.
But whatever. I'm not. Kyle Connor's fastest skater might have a chance as well, but whatever. If you're looking for something cool to do tonight, though, folks, make sure you tune into the PWHL 3-on-3 showcase. Keep your eyes peeled for Savannah Harmon, friend of the show, as she's skating for Team King. It should be a fun game in terms of what she's doing. Savannah, though, was in another skills competition earlier this week, mm-hmm. for those that didn't see it, as she participated in the Ottawa Senators skills competition alongside Breanne Jenner, Emily Clark, and Daryl Watts, as four of the PWHL Ottawa players were invited to come play with the Senators. Mm-hmm. Harmon ended up needing 13.855 seconds on accuracy shooting. She's a defender. I don't expect her to win that. Missed on the shootout attempt, again, defender, but was part of the winning puck control relay team in that event. So nice. Savannah gets a little all-star elbow rubs with some of the guys. I know there was a bunch of pictures taken and stuff or whatever. Emily Clark had her phone out and was taking pictures all over the place, so that's kind of cool to see. I got about 10 minutes left here, or 9 minutes left here, Jay. Stadium series, god awful. Just brutal.
Oh,
like, why are we even doing this?
We need to stop having outdoor games.
We need to stop having outdoor, period.
Like, why does the NHL, like,
unless
the revenue must be off the chain for them to continue doing this, or they're just sinking money into something that's not, like, you're irrelevant.
Well, you're playing three games at baseball stadiums, mm-hmm. or football stadiums, I guess, depending on where they go, but you look like absolute trash on the ice. Like, that Islanders jersey is an absolute eyesore.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that you stole Nashville Smashville jersey, but you shouldn't be able to copy that jersey.
No, it's Lou Lamoriello being like, oh, we have to do can't we just wear our regular jerseys for this? Why do we have to do this?
Rangers will give a pass. They at least put NYR in the same mode as their home jersey. I'll give the Flyers an okay. You're not great by any means. You're missing a lot of color on there. You're not white. You're an orange and black.
It just looks like a Flyers jersey. It doesn't look like any
Devils.
A special outdoor game.
Devils is brutal. I'm sorry, but go back to your heritage jerseys and just be smart about it.
Yeah, they've got.
But this
you
is
can
the thing.
Only do so much with black and red.
I don't care about those four teams, so I'm not going to watch that crap.
In a division that's just like not good,
like,
this year.
Why? I don't know. Whatever. I don't care.
It's the NHL is trying so hard to like do something cool and, you know, be.
You want
to
do something cool? Don't do stuff.
Yeah.
Be the opposite of what you're doing.
Like, literally, like you've been trying this for over a decade and it's not working. You are falling further and further behind for very obvious reasons, and you're not addressing the obvious reasons. You're just throwing. It's just deck chairs on the Titanic.
We can stop sending the Titanic deck chairs over because they're going to end up at the bottom anyway eventually. So, 5 minutes left. I want to make sure we get this story in because I think this is a big story. And certainly, Jason, I know you're going to have comments on this. If you were at GFL Memorial Gardens Sault Ste. Marie recently, you may have noticed the absence of a banner hanging from the rafters. The Sioux Greyhounds have removed the number of John Van Beesbrook from the rafters. Mm-hmm. Tim Lukenda, who's the Greyhounds owner, said, quote, "We aren't trying to make a big deal of it. We just thought it'd be the right thing to do at this time. Basically, we want to make sure we are creating a welcoming environment for all of our guests, players, former players, and families. As part of the updating of retired jerseys on display in our arena, we decided to discontinue the display of this particular jersey in our rafters," unquote. Now, a little suspicious because John Van Beesbrook has had a very large bag he's been carrying with him for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Lukenda did note that jersey number one will remain retired and will not be worn by any of the Greyhounds.
That's what I was gonna say.
Which, okay, fine, you've retired it. I get it.
They're just removing the banner.
Right. You're removing the banner, the number won't be worn again. But it seems like this move is long overdue. For those that don't know, Van Beesbrook had stepped down as head coach and general manager of the Greyhounds in March of 2003 after he used a racist term to describe Captain Trevor Daly. For those that don't know Daly, he is a player of color. Uh-huh. Van Beesbrouck was suspended indefinitely by the Ontario Hockey League after that incident. Daly issued a statement this week praising the move by the team through the Hockey Diversity Alliance, of which he's a member. And it read, quote, Hockey for the most part, has given me the amazing opportunities that I'm so grateful for. The one very dark and racist moment of my hockey career is something that I had to relive each time I returned to the gardens and looked up to the rafters. The next time I enter the gardens, look up and not have to relive one of the worst moments of my life eliminates a major source of anger and frustration for both me and my family, unquote.
So the Greyhounds are trying to have their cake and eat it too.
They don't want to be admitting that they had a racist on staff, but they had a racist on staff.
Yeah. So they're, because they do, I've seen reports like from people that they do this quite often, that they change which banners are hanging
up
because they
fine.
Only have
yeah.
so much room.
Which is
so
fine.
They're just using this as an excuse to take it down. The number staying retired and whatever, and they're going to keep the banner. But here's the thing. I get that it was 21 years ago. However, that does not erase the fact that it happened.
But I think that's the push, right? Like now that we it's happened and it still happens and we're far more vocal about it now, I think that's the difference for the Sooner is that they can use their moment of convenience to really erase their well, not erase, but at least go back to.
But again, it's not
removing that ugliness.
John Van Beesbrouck isn't entitled to having his jersey number up there in the rafters.
No.
It's not his right. It's a privilege. It's a decision that the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds made, and it's their decision whether to have it up there or not. So the people getting bent out of shape about it,
well, there's
obviously
that,
a lot of them are being disingenuous about it. But
nobody was really bent out of shape about it, and I think that's the nice part, is that nobody really came out and said, oh, what are you doing?
Like, well, I've seen some people get bent out of shape.
I mean, there
are
a few people
it.
That, yeah, but again, those are crackpots, and we don't need to bring them up, but whatever. But I think that, you know, fixing a problem and finally admitting that there's a problem without actually admitting there's a problem is better than at least not fixing the problem at all. It's disingenuous, but it's at least solving the issue at this point. So we'll see if the Sioux ever replace that. I doubt they will, but we'll see. Melbourne moment before we go, because I said we were going to get this on today and it's kind of crazy. I'm not going to set it up for anybody except to say that I don't know if this would ever happen to anybody or anybody who let their kid do this, but let's have at it.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay, here. Oh, wait. I got to get it queued up here. I had the wrong. There we go. Here we go.
Tonight, a story that has all the makings of a crime drama playing out in a southeast shopping centre. A trapped child, a daring police rescue, and it all starts with a plush toy.
In our criminal justice system, police are called to rescue Queenslanders in their time of need. Sometimes that involves an arcade game and one very determined child. This is Ethan's story. It's past 7 p.m. and the three-year-old's parents don't quite know what to do. Ethan's trapped in a prison of his own making, one packed full of plush toys, climbing into a claw machine at a Capalabar shopping centre.
I was about 2 metres away from him and he was in that machine and up it in a matter of seconds. He just stood up and he's jumped straight on top of all the toys, thinking he was king of the mountain.
He can't, or won't, get out.
Glass. Perfect. Glass.
He doesn't look too worried, but police are called in, quickly hatching a rescue plan. The sign says two plays for $5, but officers aren't playing games.
He goes to that back corner.
Yep. She's having so much fun with this story.
Ethan, cover your eyes, hide.
The toddler takes cover and lifted out by police, handed over to his parents who've scored the ultimate prize, Ethan's safety.
You won a prize. Which one do you want?
Ethan was just ecstatic that the police came. He loves the police.
This is the first in 11 years of policing. I wasn't expecting this one to come up.
All up, Ethan was inside the machine for around an hour, remaining calm the entire time. He didn't get to take a toy home though, did you?
Yay.
His parents want to discourage him from climbing into any more machines.
Yeah, that was chilly, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm not doing
it. I'm not.
Reuniting with his rescuing officer today, who had other ideas.
That's all right.
As for the message for parents from police,
beware the gumball machine.
Oh my
That made the Australian news.
That's such an Australian story, but also the reporter was having so much
fun.
Oh,
yeah. Like that puff piece. That could have been done in about 30 seconds, and she stretched that out to like 2.5 minutes.
Oh, so.
So
good. It's so funny.
But yeah, so kids stuck in a claw machine down in Australia made the news. So
I love Australian news.
Before we get out of here, anything you want to say, Jay? We're legitimately just about right out of time here.
Congratulations to the Thompson Okanagan Lakers.
Yeah, congratulations to them. Hopefully they do well. BC EHL moving forward. They're going to be hosting the SO Cup this year as well. So congratulations to them, and hopefully they can make an impact there and maybe bring home another gold medal. Who knows? With that, folks, we're out of here for another week, though. Thanks for tuning in to the Hockey Show. We'll see you next week here on the program. Stay safe, stay warm, and enjoy this nice weather out there, because this is ridiculous for February, folks. As we get out of here for another night, stay tuned. Skippy coming up right away on Free Range Radio here on 101.5 UMFM.
Now, boys, how about a little dinner music?
Nowadays, people tend to look over the real art of DJing. DJing.
Are tuned in to CJUM FM. Here we are, 101.5.